Namahabhajami Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Vedum Kwanatam Maravindadalayakasham Varhavatam Samashtitam Udashundarangam Kandarpakoti Kameniya Visheshobham Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Angini Asya Shakani Triyavriti Mati Pasyati Pati Kalyati Shiram Jagati Ananda Sinmaya Sedu Swede Vigreha Se Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Govindam Adipurusham Namahabhajami Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna
Thank you very much, Shana. Thank you so much. I hope Sanjeev Prabhu will show up in a few minutes. Meantime, we'll offer our prayers to our Guru Parampara. Om Ajnana Timirandasa Jnananjana Kasalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadavaitam Savadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padat Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Deena Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanta कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी विश्वभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम पदाय ते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामिने गौरतिषे नमः I offer my respectful obeisances at the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna Chaitanya, who is more magnanimous than any other incarnations, even Krishna himself, because he is bestowing freely what no one else ever given, that is Krishna Prema. Krishna Varanam Tvisha Krishnam Sangu Pangu Astra Parshadam Yajnahi Sankirtana Prayair Yajanti Subedasaha. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregation chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sing the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. So now we offer prayers to the six persons of Vrindavan, especially to Sri Jiva Goswami, seeking their mercy. नाना शास्त्र विचारणैक निपुणौ षड् धर्म संस्थापकौ लोकानाम हितकारिणौ विभुवने मान्यौ शरण्याकरौ राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजना आनन्देन मत्तालिकौ वन्दे रूप सनातन रघुयुगौ श्री जीव गोपालकौ ट्रांसलेशन आई ऑफर माय रिस्पेक्टफुल ओबेसेंसेस टू द सिक्स गोस्वामीज नेमली श्री सनातन गोस्वामी श्री रूप गोस्वामी श्री रघुनाथ भट्ट गोस्वामी श्री रघुनाथ दास गोस्वामी श्री जीव गोस्वामी एंड श्री गोपाल भट्ट गोस्वामी who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Shri Radha and Krishna. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयम् उदीरयत् नष्टप्रायेष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवय भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय श्री गोविंद Hare Krishna, everyone. Please accept my humble obeisances. All Praja Shri Prabhupada. So let's begin. Before we begin, I have to turn on the camera. I hope Sanjay Prabhu is back here now. Otherwise, I don't know who is going to show the PowerPoints. But you all have my PowerPoints. So please keep it handy. Hopefully, in the meantime, Sanjay Prabhu or Makarand Prabhu, somebody will be coming on time. Hare Krishna. I'll just turn the camera on. Thank you. 16, we covered how the absolute truth, which is the ultimate reality, how that is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, the famous Vadanti verse, that is, there are three aspects actually, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And they are actually one and the same. There is no really difference between them. The only issue is that the worshipper, depending upon his adhikara, upon his perception, either he has sees, realizes Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan. Brahman, now this is a very confusing element actually. We have been hearing that Brahman, in the very beginning we heard that Brahman is devoid of any qualities. Actually, that is what Mayavadi philosophy says, that Paramatma is little higher the devotee, and Bhagavan is a fully realized devotee. And we have been hearing now yesterday that Brahman, there is really no difference, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, one and the same, but from a different angle of vision, different kind of realization, one's ability to perceive differently, then we see that difference. So Brahman also has been described as full of attributes, although by definition Brahman, we know that it's like the example that we saw in a very introductory class, that it is a blue lotus. Now, if it's a lotus, it will be like just like saying Brahman, you know. So there is no particular qualifications, no particular description further, like any other lotus. But if it's a blue lotus, that means we are specifying by adjective, you know. So Brahman is like blue lotus, you know, same way. However, when we say lotus, then if we have, we mean that lotus, that same blue lotus that we are referring in, like, not like any other lotus, then just that lotus way saying that, that is as good as saying blue lotus, you know. So that's the, in that context, Dhruva Maharaj is offering prayers, even though he's seeing the Lord right in front of him, actually, you know, as a person in front of him, and yet he addresses the Lord as Brahman, you know. And then he describes that Brahman is full of qualities and so on like that. So in other words, what he's referring, Brahman is non-different from Bhagavan. So all the characteristics of Bhagavan, that applies to Brahman also. So it's one and the same. So so this is the issue of a little bit confusion about that. And we will go through that again, the introductory part of that. But in the meantime, we'll continue. So good, Sanjeev Prabhu is back here. So we are seeing the PowerPoint here, the very first PowerPoint. So very quickly we'll rehash, going through the PowerPoints. So this theme 2 is all about Bhagavan's potencies now, Bhagavan's attributes. So yesterday we covered lesson 5, actually previous week we covered lesson 5 and 6. Yesterday we covered lesson 5, first sub-theme, that Bhagavan is the shelter of his mutually conflicting potencies. Sanskrit word is paraspar virudhe. So he has unlimited potencies, innumerable, but broadly speaking, they are in three broad categories. The internal potency or Swarupa Shakti, the external potency is Maya Shakti, and the third is the intermediary, which the living entities be. You know? And they are in conflict with each other, mutually conflict. So they act in opposition to other, you know. And yet, they remain in perfect harmony. They coexist in Bhagavan. So it is part and parcel of Bhagavan, actually. Integral part, intrinsic to Bhagavan, you know. So that is the first theme. And the second theme that we covered also, that we'll be covering today, actually. That the Bhagavan has both conscious inner potencies, which are inconceivable and intrinsic. So that itself is inconceivable, how conflicting potencies can coexist in Bhagavan, and in perfect harmony. So that we will be discussing in this text today, 15, 16, 17. We actually, it started with 15 also. And the third and fourth theme is about external potencies that we will discuss next week, the third theme, and following week, the fourth theme. So the next PowerPoint. So next PowerPoint is about this first theme. Bhagavan is the shelter of spiritually conflicting of potencies. The third PowerPoint is this is internal and external potencies, Swarupa Shakti and the Maya Shakti are diametrically opposed to each other, you know, functionally, like dark and light, Paraspar Virudhe, and yet perfectly supported by Bhagavan, you know. So these are the inconceivable feature of the Absolute Truth. It defies logic actually. But the logic doesn't apply here. So Bhagavan's potency are the source of dispute and consensus. Lot of philosophers, different schools of thought, they hear there's a constant discussion about that actually. So Daksha Maharaj actually offers prayers to the Lord, yat shaktaya prate vadinam vai. So different. Vadis, Maya Vadis, Brahma Vadis, and so on. Basically, there are two schools of thought actually. They each, Vivad, they sort of argue with each other. And sometimes they agree, and sometimes they don't agree. But Daksha Maharaj said that I nonetheless offer my obeisances to the Lord who has Namo Ananta Gunaya Bhumne. So, Lord is. Endowed with innumerable potencies. So what is this mutually opposing potencies? Here you see the example. The external potency Maya Shakti with to the living entities. Adi Atmik, Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik. Adi Atmik means the misery is caused by one's own body and mind. Adi Bhautik means by the other living entities. And Adi Daivik, the natural calamities like earthquake and so on like that. So these three kinds of miseries every living entity faces at the top of birth, age, death. So it causes perpetual existence in material world actually. So it causes bondage. Whereas internal potency, they remove these miseries, they dispel that, and it grants liberation. So not only there are mutually conflicting this potency between each other, external and internal potency, but even within the same category there is a conflict there, like the three modes of material nature, the subdivision sattva guna, raja guna, tamo guna, they also function mutually opposition. So there is a nice sum, and so in the same way internal potency also there are three subgroups with differing kind of characteristics, Sandini Shakti, Samavit Shakti, and Ladini Shakti. So this is a nice analogy given as like a key lamp, you know. So the key lamp is a flame of the lamp subsists on both on the wick and the key actually. At the same time, it consumes a key also, you know. So that is itself is in built in contradictions. Next one. So Jiva Goswami then, as usual, he makes a statement from Srimad Bhagavatam and then finds support from that. So here also, he cites evidence in support of Bhagavan's mutually opposing potencies, text 13 and 14. Particularly, he cites Dhruva Maharaj, as I told right at the beginning. Dhruva Maharaj is offering prayers, Lord besides him is facing him in personal form, yet he's offering prayers to the Lord as Brahman. So Brahman by definition is without qualities, of course. So why is he addressing him as Brahman with all this grace, which is itself contradicting itself, you know? The answer really is that the nature of Brahman is included in Bhagavan as such. The nature of Brahman is included in Bhagavan also. So in that way there is no distinction actually. So that is what we have to remember, so we don't get confused. Even Maitreya Muni got confused, that we will see here. Yeah? There's another verse also Jiva Goswami cites actually. So here, that's the verse that is Dhruva Maharaj speaks. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always, here it is, that we saw the next one. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, knowledge and ignorance. Your multi-energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, original, changeless, unlimited, blissful, is the cause of this material manifestation. You see that? And a similar verse that we are going to see today also, we are going to hear about that. You know, because you are the same impersonal Brahman, so that Brahman is part and parcel of the Absolute Truth. There is no ontological difference actually. So all the characteristics of Bhagavan that applies to Brahman also in that regard. You know, so that's the reason why Dhruva Maharaj is offering prayers to Brahman aspect. You know, the next PowerPoint, that is PowerPoint number 8. So Jiva Goswami now quotes a verse from the 4th canto, 17th chapter, text 33, where Maitreya Muni actually narrates to Vidura Maharaj about the prayers Mother Earth offers to Prithu Maharaj, who she learns that is actually the Supreme Lord himself. Prithu Maharaj actually had chastised Mother Earth for failing to yield all the basic necessity of life. So here Mother Earth is glorifying the Lord here. My dear Lord, by your potencies, you are the original cause of material elements, as well as the performing instruments, the senses, the workers of the senses, and so on like that. The controlling demigods, the intelligence, ego, and so on. Like that. So by your energy, you manifest this entire cosmic manifestation. Through your energy alone, everything is sometimes manifest and sometimes missed. This also we'll be discussing in text 16 or so. You know. So this was actually shows further how his potencies may be in conflict with one another. Okay. So moving on to the fast forward. So now, so two questions actually arises here. This is now PowerPoint for 10 actually. So this is PowerPoint number, yes, correct, thank you. So two questions actually arises. How is it possible that Bhagavan's potencies that act in opposition to one another, paraspar viruddha, and yet can coexist in perfect harmony within him? Doesn't this defy logic actually, you know? Because when you have two diametrically opposite things acting, yes, obviously there is a constant conflict about who is going to get the supremacy. So both cannot exist in perfect harmony. You know? So the answer is yes, the logic cannot apply here. You know? This is because it is inconsistent nature of the Absolute Truth. And as such, it cannot be understood by mere logic. You know? So here, Jiva Goswami cites the verse actually spoken by Devahuti to her son, who is the Supreme Lord, Kapil Dev, you know, 3rd canto, 33rd chapter, 3rd verse. So Devahuti speaks to her son who she learns as the Supreme Lord. And Jivagosa also cites two Vedanta Sutras also actually. So Devahuti actually is perplexed, you know, and she notices the incredible, inconceivable contradictions here. So she heard that the Supreme Lord created this cosmic manifestation from the navel, this the lotus stem originates, grows, and on the lotus flower, Brahmaji is created actually, and then the whole entire cosmic manifestation takes place actually. Now the same Supreme Lord in whom the entire material world is situated, the same Lord is now present within her womb right now. So she was really astonished by that fact, you know. So she actually glorifies the Lord. That built-in contradictions by definition is of the Supreme Lord. The next PowerPoint. So Devaki was astonished to learn that her son was the Supreme Lord, and how who created Brahma here, that is this particular thing. So it is achintya, you know, inconceivable characteristic of the Supreme Lord. Atma Ishvara Atarkya Sahasra Shakti. Atarkya means that is beyond logic, beyond material logic. And he has thousands and thousands of potencies actually, and classified in only three categories: internal potency, external potency, and the intermediary. You know? So how is it that Brahman is indivisible, can perform actions? So this controversy is now resolved in two Vedanta Sutras actually, Jiva Goswami aside. So Vedas declare Brahman to be free from such internal divisions. Brahman does indeed possess inconceivable potencies that act in opposition to one another. Now again, don't confuse yourself. Brahman here thinks that it is representing Bhagavan, you know. So there is Brahman being non-different than Bhagavan actually. You know? So in that sense. And the second sutra explains the coexistence of such paradoxical potencies, diametrically opposite potencies within the Lord. So this is very much like that. If you the mantras, the sound vibration, have inconceivable power to heal incurable diseases. So why not Bhagavan? You know, because everything is possible for the Lord. Actually, there's nothing impossible. You know. So now that brings us to today's class actually, and we just begin the text 16. And as I told you, that there are we already heard so much in the first theme that the in Tattvasiddham also we heard that how Mayavadi philosophy of Shankaracharya, he says that Brahman is the only reality. Bhagavan he considers is just like an illusion, you know, and Brahman itself comes under the influence of Maya, particularly avidya potency of Maya, and then because of that upadhi, so that qualities of Maya, the potency of Maya is actually superimposed on Brahman, and that's how Brahman acquires qualities. Otherwise they don't believe that, you know. So fundamental character of Bhagavan is that he is the supreme person with his variegated potency that are inherent in him, that is in complete opposition to Mayavadi philosophy. So this is what Jiva Goswami is establishing, that and they are not really superimposed on him. So this entire text 16 that what we are going to see here, and which is the most important text actually in this regard, we already heard about the inconceivable nature of the Brahman, that Brahman has a diametrically opposite characteristics of the potencies, and they coexist in perfect harmony. But what we are hearing now, in addition to that, that the Lord naturally has this potency. It is not that something that is superimposed from outside. There is intrinsic. Jiva Goswami's disciples. Actually, there are three verses, you know, that Jiva Goswami's disciples. And it's very, very important that we actually understand those three verses. And I'll try my best to explain those, you know. So these potencies can neither overpower him, nor can they act or exist independent of, unlike what Mayavadi Shankaracharya says that, you know. So rather, they are subservient to him. All his potencies are completely under his control. In fact, the following week, when we start the next theme about all about external potency, we'll be learning much great details about his Lord's external potency before Jiva Goswami begins to discuss about the internal potency. Because internal potency, for us who have no experience of that, it's very difficult to comprehend. But when we can relate this external potency, because that we are faced with all the time, so then we can understand that. So that's why Jiva Goswami first explains external potency. So even though, despite their paradoxical nature, opposing, functionally opposite nature, Lord's potencies, they coexist within him and function in perfect harmony with each other. So that is the first subtext of text 16 speaks about that. So now he's going to cite some key verses about that, you know. Next part. Okay. So to prove the intrinsic and inconceivable nature of these potencies in Bhagavan, Jiva Goswami is now going to cite verses spoken by this Pipalayani Yogendra to King Nimi. Very important verse actually. This is from 11th canto, 3rd chapter, text 37. This is in response to King Nimi's questions about the absolute truth, the potencies. And the other one he is going to cite, the verse is from Vishnu Purana, where there is a dialogue Parasa Muni and Maitreya Muni actually. This is from Vishnu Purana. So let us first discuss about this verse that Pipalayana speaks to King Nimi, you know. And this is again, remember, these two verses are going to demonstrate that these potencies are intrinsic, part and parcel, inherent within Bhagavan and not really superimposed upon him actually. So this is the first one, this is the spoken by Pipalayana Yogendra to King Nimi. Sattva rajas tama iti tribrat, three ekam adau sub mahan aham iti pravadanti jivam dan kriya artha phal rupatayo uru shaktir brahma eva bhati sat asat jato param yat. So here you see that originally there's one, so brahman adau, originally brahman is one. Okay, that comes down to as threefold actually, manifesting itself as a three modes of material nature. This three ekam adau. So first Brahman alone was there, and now it's going to expand into three, according to three modes of material nature, for to manifest this material world, cosmic manifestation sutra. So first is going to manifest, first it is the this the three modes of material nature is in perfect equilibrium, it's in a dormant state, and now when that gets activated by Lord to it, it's actually the paramatma feature, the time potency, that sets these three modes of material nature in motion. So pradhana, which is pushed, now becomes sutra, activated stage. The sutra later on becomes mahatattva, when living entities are also injected into it. That we already saw before. And how this these potencies are manifesting into this different, this jnana, kriya, artha, phala, rupa, tayo, shakti, and so on like that. Jnana means this, here, let's read this. Originally one, the absolute Brahman, comes to be known as the threefold manifesting self, as the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then, thus So thus by so Brahman already has this portal. Remember, this is way, way before the cosmic manifestation, before even this the Maya potency actually becomes Maya's three modes of materiality gets activated. So it is not, it's completely opposite. Just point I'm trying to make here, what Jiva Goswami's point trying to make here, that unlike what Shankaracharya says, that the Brahman comes in proximity to Maya's three potencies, three modes of material nature, especially avidya potency, and then Brahman is superimposed by the qualities of material nature. But here, as you see here, Brahman is actually having potency to create material world way, way before Maya's three modes of material gets become activated. So it is intrinsic right from beginning, Adha Ohina. So that's the point that I would like you to remember that. So then, of course, it sets into motion actually, how the three modes of material nature, which are equilibrium, dormant state, pradhana, it becomes activated as sutra first, and sutra, when living entities get injected, it becomes the mahat tattva. Mahat tattva is the cosmic intellect, actually, you know. And then how the false ego is created, you know. So the living entities now comes the mahan aham itya, the aham bhav. Aham bhav means actually I, me and mine kind of tendency develops in the jiva, you know, starts. And how it's manifest first, this jnana, that is the jnana, that's the demigods are created, of course. Kriya, artha, phala, rupa, tayo, this is explained in the next PowerPoint actually. So here it is. Thus, by the expansion of multi potencies of the absolute, the demigods, that's the jnana shakti, as the embodiment of knowledge, become manifest, along with the material senses, the sense objects, and the results of material activity, food activity, and so on like that. So here it exists, expands. Brahman alone exists in the beginning, Adao, you know, inherently self-endowed with great potency, Uru Shakti, actually. The verse says that Uru Shakti. Uru Shakti means great, powerful potency. This is already part of Brahman, integral part, inherent within him, you know, way, way before the Maya's three modes material get activated. Which means that it passes this variegated potency within its essential nature, you know. That is the very internal this potency actually. So in what form do all this manifestation of Brahman exist? And that is what says the sage people in a response. So in the form of cognition, there's knowledge potency, jnana potency, then actions, kriya, artha, objects, the sense objects, and the consequences. So jnana, kriya, artha, phala, rupataya, you know. So jnana shakti manifests into mahat tattva, that is the cosmic intellect. The kriya shakti manifests into sutra, that is the activated three modes of material nature. And then artha, the sense objects, that manifests in the tanamatras, this gross material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, you know. So Brahman manifests into threefold gunas of sattva, rajas and tamas. And sutra and mahatattva gives rise to false ego. And that is what superimposed on the living entity as this aham bhav, that I, me and mine actually. Now, I am American, I am Indian, I am white, I am black and so on like that, you know. This is mine, this is yours and so on like that, you know. So that is because of this three modes of material nature, besides this false ego, the bodily conception of life. So all these things comes from Brahman. Okay, the next point. So it very clearly shows this particular verse that the potency of the Brahman is within itself. Within it's inherent, intrinsic to it. It's not something that is from outside. It comes, you know. So this verse also further explains how this cosmic manifestation proceeds from Bhagavan. So before creation, only he existed. That's also the Chatushruti Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabho matah sarvam pravartate iti matva vidyatema bhuta avasmanita. Then also the first Bhagavatam, Chatushruti Bhagavatam verse, aham evasam evagre. So that clearly says that when nothing was there, and Lord says, I was there with all my potencies and so on like that. So principal implication that Jiva here draws from this verse is that potencies are inherent or intrinsic significantly in Brahman rather than Bhagavan actually. Therefore, his potencies must originate in him. Since he alone existed before cosmic manifestation, it is understood that his abode and associates are within him as they are manifestations of his internal potency. So all this in completely 2 weeks from now, we are going to begin discussing how external potency actually manifests and so on like that. Great detail. There we'll see the external potency also. There are two kinds, Jiva Maya, Guna Maya and so on like that. We'll see that. How living entities, their material bodies, senses and so on like that, their also develops from that. And the Guna Maya is the three modes of material nature. Now, copy number 18. So here, this particular verse, very important verse, clearly demonstrate that these potencies are within, intrinsic to Bhagavan, a Brahman aspect of it, Now the second verse is quoted. Now this is the verse, actually dialogue between Maitreya Muni and Parasara Muni actually. Now Parasara Muni had, in the previous chapter of Vishnu Purana that's cited here, previous to that one which is cited here, in which he told Maitreya Muni that the Lord is without any kind of attributes and so on like that, Nirguna Nirakara, and how he is the cause of supreme cause of all causes. So that triggers Maitreya Muni. So you see how Maitreya Muni also got confused about the definition of Brahman. And it's very easy to get confused here actually. That's what I'm going to read the introductory part on this book. So we don't get confused actually. And here Parasara Muni actually corrects Maitreya Muni. So Maitreya Muni is expressing his confusion here. In this verse, Nirguna Apramesya Suddhasya Api Amala Atmana Katam Sarga Adi Kartatvam Brahmano Abhi Upagamyate. So here, so what Maitreya Muni is asking, the Brahman is free of material qualities, Nirguna, and immeasurable, Apramesya, that means, what here it means, it's free from the space and time constraint, So if any agent in material world must have a form, must have attributes, must have likes and dislikes and so on like that. So here the Brahman is shown as an agent to create this material cosmos actually. So one would expect that Brahman also would have some kind of qualities and some things like that. So here he is, because Brahman by definition is without attributes, is indivisible without attributes. So that definition is correct. It's no doubt about it. But it is in the context of how you say it. If it is and we already discussed that there is depends upon the particular the worshipper how his perception sees that through. According to his perception, this is one particular aspect of it. So if you in that regard you see that Brahman is without attributes. However, when you see it in context of the full Bhagavan, complete Bhagavan, then this Brahman is not something that is a particular part of Bhagavan or something like that. No. There's no difference Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. It's one and the same. But how you see it, how you approach it with your, how you perceive it, that depends upon that. And that's how Parasara Muni is going to correct Maitreya Muni here. So Maitreya Muni is asking a very logical question actually. His confusion is quite understandable. So by definition, Brahman is free of material qualities. Immeasurable, that means free from space and time constraint, is completely pure. What it means completely pure here, that it does not have a form. Nirguna nirakara, no form. And spotless in a sense, without any kind of sinful acts and reactions and so on like that, you know. So how, this question is, how that can be attributed to the agency behind creations. So how Brahman could be the agent to create, maintain and dissolve this material universe? Very logical question actually. And quite naturally he's confused about that. Because by definition it is true. It's like the blue lotus. When you say just lotus, it doesn't specify a particular quality. That's a blue lotus. Whereas blue lotus is the complete representation of Bhagavan. So that lotus and blue lotus, there's fundamentally there's no difference. It's saying that both sing the same thing. But if you say lotus in the context of the blue lotus, then you're all right. No different. No problem. You know that the lotus itself would have the quality of the blue color. You know. But when you say context of any other lotuses, then that's where the problem creates actually, you know. So Parasamuni corrects that here. Yeah. So he says Shaktaya Sarva Bhavana Achinti Jnana Gochara. So this particular phrase, the compound word, Achintya Jnana Gochara, very, very important for us to understand that. I'll try my best and spend some time to actually explain that, you know. That definition we must clearly understand in order to understand what is this Brahman and his attributes, potency. Otherwise, we will also be confused like Maitreya Muni. Because we have been taught by definition Brahman is without attributes. That is exactly true, you know. But if you speak Brahman in the context of Bhagavan as a same, this being non-different from Bhagavan, then Brahman would have all the characteristics, attributes, potencies. So Shaktaya Sarva Bhavana Achintya Jnana Gochara Yato Yato Brahmanas Tastu Sarga Adya Bhava Shaktaya Bhavanti Tapasam Shrestha Pavakasya Yato Shnata. Oh, based on the ascetics, that means Muni, the energies of all existent objects are inconceivable. So this is what one has to understand, that whenever we are talking about a supreme law or absolute truth, this logic doesn't apply. You know, when you say that, oh, it doesn't make sense, it defies logic. It just doesn't make sense. You know, logic doesn't apply here. You know, so because it's achintya, inconceivable, but yet it's perceptible. So the achintya jnana, so that knowledge is inconceivable knowledge actually, but it, and yet it can be perceptible, it can be felt, you know. So it can be perceptible by intuitive knowledge. That is what the issue is here. Just like heat in fire, you know, whenever you are, this heat is already there actually. Even though heat you cannot see it, obviously you cannot see it, but you can feel it, right? So within the fire, when you sit near the fire, obviously you are going to experience the heat, you know? Even though you can't see it. It's exactly the same like that here. So by being able to perceive it, then you know what it is actually. So by simply seeing in the effect, you can presume what's its cause actually. That's exactly. It's called Arthapath, Sanskrit. It's called Arthapath. So similarly, know that Brahman's energies, such as its creative power, are inconceivable and beyond human intelligence. So by our own human experience, we are unable to understand that. Only we have to really hear from the self-realized souls. So when they speak with this tremendous, tremendous faith and conviction, so through the sound vibration, actually it sits in our heart actually. It sits in our mind. But on our own, if we try, no matter how long we try, it is very good, very, very difficult. Only we must hear from proper source, so that this sound vibration, transcendental sound vibration, is very important actually. You know. So in his response, establishing that Brahman is inconceivable potency from which form, variety, and actions manifest, which are transcendental, eternal, unlimited. Of course, there is this well beyond our experience. We cannot fathom that. So Sridhar Swami actually makes comments on this particular verse, and he explains this. When you say nirgunasya, that means no material qualities. He says that but no spiritual qualities either right now. So apramesya means immeasurable, actually the real translation, but here it means is not limited by the space and time constraint. Shuddhasya means pure, but here it means it doesn't have a physical form without body. And amala atma means without any kind of impurities, you know? So here it means free from any effects of pious or impious acts, impurities like attachment and repulsion and so on like that. So how could Brahman, with this description, be the agent behind creation of the universe? So that is the issue what Maitreya Muni was asking that. So Parasara Muni actually clarifies this doubt. He's saying that the energy of the any objects that exist in this material world, sarkritya sarva bhavanam, that was actually begins. Sarva bhavanam is that means material world actually. So any object in material world, if you're talking about even certain gems, has certain gems, a very very invaluable gem actually, characters. So by looking at it, you don't have that concept of it, but by its qualities, by its effect, with the brilliant colors, and those experts can see the value of it, so by that you infer that it's an invaluable gem. Same about mantras, now mantras, there are in India very knowledgeable people who utter these verses from our Vedas, and these verses, these mantras have a tremendous potency to cure even incurable diseases like cancer and so on like that. So when a doctor, a Western educated doctor, hears about that, he would just laugh it at it, he would say that it's just myth, it's just a pipe dream, because we know science says cancer, and I spent 20 plus years in cancer research. Cancer is disease of the cell, normal cell becomes haywire, and also regulatory things go haywire. So there's a mutation in its genetic material and so on like that. So how simply uttering this verse, these mantras, can abolish all these things and suddenly cure cancer is completely, it won't sit in our mind, the scientist's mind actually. But nonetheless, the observation is there. That's the point here actually. And that's exactly the point, as I told you yesterday also, the book I'm writing is exactly the same, that simply person's personality traits. Somebody has a very aggressive personality, somebody has a very docile personality, and so on like that. These are actually, we are born with it. Abhijatasya, Krishna says in Gita. We are born with it. That means it is within our DNA, and yet, by simply practicing spiritual practices, devotional service, chanting the holy name, associating devotees, honoring Krishna Prasadam, and all these simple acts actually sound vibrant. Is simply that changes so much. Persons, aggressive persons become very docile, very very meek, very humble. And it is, and then observation. That's the point I'm trying to make. Observation is there, but it's very difficult for us, those who have no experience, can fathom that actually. So here the same thing, this mantras that cures incurable diseases, even in the in South America, there are people, it's called faith healing actually. Even great devotees, great saintly people, by simply the touch of the disease, we hear so much stories, even Bible also. Jesus Christ used to simply touch someone, and that person will be completely cured. Even a dead person comes. other stories about that. So that, in the modern world, it's very, very difficult. The thing is just a mythological, it's just religion, so like that, it's just faith. But nonetheless, observation is there. It has been actually demonstrated, authenticated, this observation is there actually. So that means that there must be some way this sound vibration must be connecting with that. So that's right what I'm writing in my book actually, that this spiritual practice actually affects the very the way the genes are expressed actually, and that's how the personality traits are, and that the modern science knows that by 70-80% of the time, these personalities, there are specific genes for that, you know, and the expression of their genes determines that. So if by this particular spiritual practices, if this gene expression is changed, then you can explain that, same thing here also, you know. So this observation is there must be some kind of explanation, and then one has to do lots of research and find out. But here in our Vedic Shastras, Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not open for research, it's a fact mentioned right there. So it is the, instead of the ascending way of acquiring a knowledge from bottom, from its trials and errors, here the knowledge is given from top to bottom actually. So here, that's the reason why he says that here, the Parasmani explains these doubts, clarifies, these energies of existential objects, satatya sarva bhavanam, such as gems and mantras, are inconceivable. You know, simply you cannot make sense out of it. You have to just accept it, you know. But they are perceptible by, they are perceptible. So by the results that you can judge, you know. So this must be true actually. Because observations are there, and there are centuries of observation, you know. But by thousands and thousands of people's experiences right there. So this achinti jnana gochara, so that knowledge is inconceivable. And yet, that knowledge by which you can perceive, that is gochara, that's what can perceive that, you know. So it's just like heat, you cannot see it, but you sit near the fire, the source of that heat, then you can actually feel it, you can perceive it, and that's how you actually arrive. So by the effect, you can actually presume what must be its cause actually. So most crucial aspect of the understanding of it, it is absolute, as the person God. So absolute truth is a person, supreme person there, you know, not some kind of impersonal aspect of it, you know. So that we must understand. So in order to understand the personal aspect of the Supreme Lord, it is very, very crucially important, paramount importance, that we understand the relationship between the Lord and His potencies. And later on we'll be hearing about the Lord's different spiritual forms and so on like that. These are the things, this whole Bhagavad Sandarbha is all about that. Everything about the Lord that is being explained in a scientific way actually. You know? But this is spiritual science, not a material science. That's the difference. So it was Jiva who first coined the words achinta bheda abheda, simultaneous oneness and distinctiveness, you know. So here, so Sridhar Swami actually makes two definitions of what is this achintya jnana gochara. I already explained to you what achintya, and it's very, very important that we understand. So that knowledge is here, but that knowledge is this this achintya, inconceivable knowledge actually. And that knowledge, it can be understood by simply perception actually. That's what it is. Inconceivable but perceptible. So here Sridhar Swami actually further defines these two aspects of it. So achintya jnana, what it means is the knowledge beyond logic. So that knowledge is not based on logic, material reasoning. That's not the kind of knowledge we are talking about. That knowledge is of this phenomenal world actually. Here this knowledge is transcendental knowledge. So that is the big difference here, you know. And the second definition here, Sridhar Swami makes here, based on our inability to comprehend how energy is related to its energetic, So this is again Achintya Veda Veda. So you see that the energy and energetic. So you have energy, and the person who has that energy, in that way both are similar, right? Energy cannot exist in the absence of energetic. The person who is energy belongs to. So in that way they are similar, and yet they are different also. Because energy cannot be energetic, the possessor of that energy. So there is simultaneous oneness and difference, you know. So Jiva Goswami, he coined this word, the phenomenon, the doctrine that was first established by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But the word itself, Achintya Veda Veda, was coined by Jiva Goswami. So by our inability to comprehend how energy is related to energetic source, whether it is one with or different from it, yet energy is accepted on the authority of presumption. Yes, I told you that. Simply by the effect, we can surmise, we can presume what the cause must be there, you know. So, exactly like that. So that's called, in Shastra, it's called Arthapati, seeing its effect. Next problem. So these two points are very, very important for us to understand. Based on these two key verses, one by the Pipalayana, spoken by Pipalayana to King Nimi, the other one explaining, clarifying the doubt of Maitreya Muni. So, because that clearly establishes that energy of potency is inherent, intrinsic to Brahman or Bhagavan. Interchangeably, that's used actually here. So, Sriram is synonymous, both Brahman and Bhagavan, they are being non-different. So, the Absolute is that all-inclusive reality in which all contradictions and opposing potentialities exist in perfect harmony. So, you know, we constantly hear, right? Lord is here and Lord is far away, you know. Lord is inside, Lord is outside, and so on like that. All this built-in contradiction, but that is the definition of the Supreme Lord. It is beyond material reasoning. So, and so the opposing potencies, they coexist. So there is surprise about that. When you accept the inconceivable nature of that, you know, and plus, this is the inconceivable knowledge, achintya jnana gochara, you know. So that aspect one must clearly accept and understand and internalize within our heart, then it makes everything makes sense. So this is first we must hear from the lotus mouth of the devotee here. So here we are hearing from Srila Jiva Goswami's explanation about that, you know. So qualities of both form and formless. So both nirguna and nirakara that we hear, and plus saguna and sakara, it all perfectly makes sense in that regard. So they inherently coexist in absolute truth. So there is a Brahman, which is the impersonal aspect of it, but Bhagavan is a personal aspect of it. Both are there in the absolute truth. So energy is the impersonal aspect of it, and the energetic is the personal aspect of it. Both cannot exist independent of each other. Both must exist. And yet there is a similar difference between the two also is there. So achintya bheda abheda. So even though it is inconceivable to our own human intelligence or our own human experience in this material world, this makes sense in that regard. If you accept achintya jnana gochara, you know, where that principle. So next ceremony now establishes that these potencies naturally belong to Brahman or Bhagavan. So his energies do not deteriorate. So this is again the difference. You know, we gave an example about heat and fire, but that is difference. That heat in the water actually, that heat actually over time dissipates. But here this potency is within Bhagavan, it never dissipates. It constant all the time, it remains there. And no one can interfere in that. That's a big difference. So his energies do not deteriorate, and or dissociate like heat. Material nature, which is one of my energies, so Gita Krishna himself says that material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction. O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings, the famous words that came. So under my direction, this Prakriti material nature works, and from which this moving and non-moving beings are created. So after introducing these verses, important key verses, and Sridhar Swami's comments on that, now Jiva Goswami offers his own reasoning, his own explanation about that. And again, this is based on a particular methodology given in Shastra actually. So anything that you want to explain, you explain from both points of view, both viewpoints, from a positive viewpoint and a negative view. So that's what this example is given here actually. So with, let's say, a positive point. So if there's a proposition, the Brahman possesses natural potency, alright? So what is the reason behind that? Because it is a reality, you know. That's the reason behind that. So then it becomes universal proposition. Every real object, such as fire, possesses potency. And what is the application? The Brahman is a real entity. And the conclusion, therefore, it has natural potency. So how see how in a positive sense you can derive and then you can apply it and make conclusion about that. So in a negative way, so you have a proposition Brahman is not devoid of natural potency. In a negative way, same thing you are saying, but in a negative connotation. So reason it is not an unreal entity. So universal proposition, only unreal entities like the horns of a rabbit don't have natural potency. That's like a myth actually, no? So the application, Brahman is not an unreal entity, double negatives. So the conclusion is that therefore it is not devoid of natural potency. That means that it has natural potency. Okay. Hopefully, Sajiv Prabhu is showing now the next PowerPoint. So now, so summarize up to this point. So Jiva Goswami, what did he actually establish thus far? And that's what's shown in the next PowerPoint, PowerPoint number 23. First and foremost is that Bhagavan is a person. Everything you will understand except that point actually. That Bhagavan is a person. And second point, he is naturally endowed with potency. It's something not coming from outside. It is intrinsic, inherent, part and parcel. Lord is endowed with this potency. This the next PowerPoint, Lord. PowerPoint number 23. The third point, inconceivably, his energies are simultaneously one and different from him. That's another the third point also. And fourth point, his energies cannot be subdued by anything or anyone else. It's within the Lord. It's actually, we are going to two classes now, that it is all coming from his internal potency. His internal potency, Swarupa Shakti, that is the one that controls external forms actually. So there's a big difference actually. The internal potency is the very nature of the Lord actually. Whereas external potency is by his expansion, super soul expansion, Paramatma expansion. What we are going to teach things in 2 weeks from now, you know. I've been preparing for that. This is electric ahead of time. The fifth point, he creates, maintains, and destroys the cosmos, but never influenced by it. Okay. The sixth point. So his energies manifest as internal, intermediary, and external. So far we have been hearing about external potency. Then he is going to expand on the internal potency and his intermediary potency, the Jiva Tattvas. Then he's going to talk in much greater detail in Paramatma Sandarbha. So right after we finish the second module, Bhagavad Sandarbha, then we'll be discussing toward the end of this year with Paramatma Sandarbha. Seventh point, potency and potent are simultaneously and inconceivably one and distinct. So energy and energetic, that's what it is. They are same and different at the same time. Eighth point, various energies of the Lord work in their respective domains and they do not have any negative influence on Him. So this is another important point. That means this internal potency and external potency, they try to infringe upon each other actually. And of course, more important, that it does not affect the Lord. Lord is the one who controls those potencies, not the potencies controls Him actually. Unlike what Shankaracharya says, you know, big difference. And the last point, here, when the intermediate energy is not in contact with the internal body, it is covered by an extra body. So Lord, you see, when Lord creates, and He has an ability to destroy also, so His ability to destroy does not disappear from Him. It coexists within the Lord same time actually. Being able to create and being able to destroy both at the same time, but He would express it at different times. Last point, the external energy, the tenth and last point. The external energy brings forth matter which is inert and mutable. Now, that is Maya actually, you know, right? So now in the next, we are going to hear about the Lord has this conscious, Bhagavan is both conscious and inert potencies, Chit and Achit. That is text 17. So text 16 is very, very important for all of you, you know. Please please make sure that you understand. If you do not, please ask me questions, all right? So this is another concept. It's not that difficult. It will make a little bit effort to understand that, you know. And I'll try to explain to you. So Jiva Goswami now explains that Brahman's three natural intrinsic potencies fall into two categories, Chit and Achit, as follows. Both internal potency is Swarupa Shakti and is intermediary, that is the Tatastha Shakti, the Jivatmas, they fall into the conscious Chit Shakti, conscious. Because the Lord is conscious, supremely conscious, and from Brahma, and we also comes part and parcel actually through Paramatma. So we are also conscious beings, okay? So we are also, it's considered Parashakti and Aparashakti. So we belong to Parashakti. But Maya, the external potency, is inert. Now, you might ask me a question, why is it inert? Because we already heard a couple of weeks back, remember, I told you that Maya is also a person, Durga Devi, right? So how she could be inert? It's the person. But it's not that Maya herself, but Maya's product of this material world, Prakriti, this material world, material bodies, they are inert, obviously, because there is no life in that, right? So in that regard, this urgent potency, you know. So this clearly opposes the theory that the absolute truth is the formless, impotent, indistinguishable, all-pervading Brahman. So that's not true in that regard, okay? That it is formless, nirguna, nirakara, all this that we are hearing from Brahman. But if you hear it in the context that is, it's knowing non-different from Bhagavan, then this is, does not make sense. But if you just talk about Brahman aspect of it, of the same Bhagavan, in that regard, that it's Lord's effulgence, you know, Brahma Jyoti. So rather, Brahman is the particular realization of Bhagavan. So in that aspect of Bhagavan that we see in Brahman actually, in which one does not distinctly perceive his energies. So see that? So now you understand that by definition, Brahman is devoid of potencies, okay? But if you talk in the context of being Bhagavan, because it's non-different, then Brahman also would have potencies in that regard, yes. So simultaneously one and simultaneously different. So this is actually the Veda. You have to understand that. So then don't get confused about that. Okay? I'll read that portion about the introductory portion again about that to make sure that, yeah. Okay, point number 26, there's the last one. So, yeah, how am I doing the time? We are doing pretty good. didn't ask for, right? So the Jiva cites the two verses. So this is the text 17 we are discussing now. Bhachit and Achit potencies. So Jiva, he made a statement now from Bhagavatam, and now he is going to substantiate by giving evidence. So Jiva Goswami cites, it's rather very interestingly, he cites now a statement made by the demon Hiranyakashipu. Now this is actually in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's given 7th canto actually. How Hiranyakashipu's brother Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord, by Lord Vishnu. His queens were really lamenting on that actually. So in order to pacify them, Hiranyakashipu actually gives this, kind of knowledge, transcendental knowledge actually. Only thing he is mistake here, Vishnu is his enemy, of course. So he considers Lord Brahma the supreme. But nonetheless, whatever he says about the supreme is exactly true here. So he says that Hiranyakashipu, that as evidence that Lord has both conscious and inner potency. That's the fact actually. That's very interesting. So the demon utilizing Brahma as the supreme controller spoke in this way. I offer my obeisances to the Lord who is conscious and inner potencies. This is 7th canto, 3rd chapter, text 34. Now significantly, Jiva also makes a point, Jiva Goswami, that a conscious entity can only emit it from and be supported by another conscious entity. As we just heard, that the intermediary potency, which is the living entity, we are also conscious, but we originate from conscious, supreme conscious, Brahman, from Bhagavan. It is not something, conscious being cannot originate from something that's inert. As Bodham Sash talks about, that's a particular way, combination of material elements, see, they do this, they look for these exoplanets, look for life forms. So they think that it's a different way of material elements. So they consider this a particular building blocks of life. If they exist, that means life automatically will come. That's not true actually, according to a Shastra, So that's what it is. A living being cannot originate simply by the combination of material elements. A Jiva, the Atma, must enter in it to bring consciousness. The consciousness is the symptomatic presence of the soul being present there. So that's what Jiva Goswami makes a point here. So consciousness cannot manifest simply by the combination of inert material elements. The Atma must enter in it. The scientists have created a living organism, of course primitive bacteria, simplified chemicals from bottles actually. But what they forget to note that whenever they combine, the functional living organism develops when the Atma enters in it. That scientists cannot see that, So to study Bhagavan's internal Swarupa Shakti, of which we can have any kind of comprehension by our own sense perception, so Jiva Goswami first introduces the description of the external potency, because that we are familiar with it. We are experienced about it, So that's why he's doing that. Then later on, he's going to explain to us about the internal potency. Once we become convinced about his external potency. Okay? So here this is the verse actually, 26. Jiva says two verses from Vishnu Purana that name the two energies, internal and external. Chitta, the Parashakti, which is the living entities, the superior. So it's interesting actually, we have the superior energy and yet we become deluded by Maya, which is inert, It's very, very interesting actually. And again, 2 weeks from now, we are going to hear about it. The Aparashakti, which is the external energy, which is inferior. And yet that inferior energy controls the living entity. How it does, that's interesting to see that. So Prahlad Maharaj actually happens to speak this verse in the Vishnu Purana. Sarva Bhuteshu Sarvatma Ya Shakti Aparatava Gunashraya Tamas Namastasyai Sashvatai Sureshvara Yatita Atita Gochara Vacham Manasacha Avisheshana Jnani Jnana Paricheda Vande Tam Ishvarim Param. So, translation: O Supreme Self of the Selves, O Controller of the Gods, I bow down to your exterior inferior potency, the support of the three gunas which exist in all beings. I further worship your all-powerful infinite potency, which is goddess beyond the reach of the world, mind and sense objects, devoid of distinguishing characteristics, and which influences, which illuminates the wisdom of the wise. So what basically is saying that this material energy, Maya, is also eternal, Shashvata. But see, the material energy is, because it's the energy of the Lord. So it is, just Lord is eternal, so his energy is also eternal, cannot exist independent of him. And yet its product, this material world, that is not eternal. In fact, that manifests and unmanifests in that regard, okay? So in that regard, is inertina. So Maya cannot directly associate with or influence the Lord, nor his internal Swarupa Shakti. They cannot cross each other's domain, actually. But the point, remember that material energy, material nature, that is eternal. But its prior material world, that is real. But it manifests and unmanifests. Whereas what Shankaracharya says, that Satyam Jagan Mithya. So he said that it's just an illusion that really doesn't exist. That exists only in our mind, actually, what he said. That. So what Srimad Bhagavatam says, that that's not true. Material world is real, but it's temporary. It manifests temporarily, it's perpetually manifest and unmanifest in a cyclic way, actually. You know? But the material nature, the material energy is eternal. So that really concludes today's class. And to summarize what we saw here in this yesterday's class and today's class, that Lord's potencies are inconceivable. It defies material logics, you know. And they are paraspar viruddha. They are diametrically opposite in terms of functional wise. And yet they coexist within the Supreme Lord, within Brahman, you know, Bhagavan. They interchangeably use Bhagavan or Brahman. Okay, I forgot to tell you, I was there, you know. Just to reinforce that, don't get confused. By definition, Brahman is, of course, devoid of these adjectives, devoid of attributes. And yet, when you talk in the context of Bhagavan, because Brahman and Bhagavan being non-different, then you can say Brahman also has attributes, just like Bhagavan has attributes. So here, let me read that. So this is the very, very introduction by this author of Bhagavad Sandarbha. So he says that, and I'm going to read just a few excerpts of that. When one realizes the absolute truth without perceiving any distinction between its energies and the absolute self, so see, without energies, okay, without energetic, it is called Brahman. So Brahman is without its energies. So means Brahman, again, let me read again, please listen carefully. When one realizes the absolute truth without perceiving any distinction between the energies and the absolute self. So what he says here clearly, that Brahman aspect of it, that worshipper is not able to perceive that relationship between energy and energetic. So his perception is only devoid of that, then only see that regard he sees Brahman without energies. So it is called Brahman. When through deeper intuitive insight one apprehends a distinction between the energies and energetic source, but perceives this distinction only in relation to the phenomenal energy, the material world, Paramatma aspect of it, the world and the living entities within it, the reality thus realized is called Paramatma. But when one's discernment of the distinction between energy and energetics removes still deeper That's what I told you very from the beginning, actually. It's very, very important in order to realize the personal aspect of the Absolute Truth, that Absolute Truth is a Supreme Person. It's very important that we recognize the relationship between the possessor of these energies, Bhagavan, and his energies. That we must understand. Then only we are going to be able to realize that Absolute Truth is the ultimate reality, is indeed a Supreme Person. If we don't recognize that, if we don't internalize, if we don't realize this connection between energy and its energetic, then we are at that stage of just Brahman aspect of it only. Thus it is clear that there is no ontological difference between Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. They are one and the same, exactly the same. So there are three aspects, but not three different parts. Right? Recognize that. They are all one and the same. The difference lies only in the level of perception of the respective seekers. See that? It's the ability to perceive things now. Nevertheless, the difference is just one of nomenclature. For example, the first blue lotus has three components. The lotus, the noun itself, a substance unqualified by any object, so let's call it Brahman. Blue, the adjective qualifying the noun, so that's the energy attributes. And the complete phrase blue lotus, that is Bhagavan, a qualified substance. So there is no real difference between lotus and the blue lotus. So when you refer to the lotus and you know that you are referring to that blue lotus, that particular lotus, then it's one and the same actually. There's no difference. But if you say lotus and you are not sure that it is the blue lotus or a white lotus or a pink lotus, if you don't have that knowledge, then you're wrong. Then it doesn't qualify that. So former does not cover any specific features, whereas the latter clearly states its color. The distinction between Brahman and Bhagavan is similar. So in this way, even though he is qualified with all potencies, Bhagavan is the undifferentiated reality because he is the complete manifestation of the Absolute Truth. Brahman, on the other hand, now listen carefully, Brahman, on the other hand, exhibits no specific qualities. So by definition, it has no qualities, alright? But if you talk in the context of being part and parcel of Bhagavan, one and the same, then it has qualities. In that regard, Dhruva Maharaj and others, they are interested in the Lord in that regard, okay? Whereas those impersonalists, when they talk about Bhagavadis, they talk regardless of Bhagavan, but they never accept Bhagavan in that regard, They say that you worship Bhagavan only those who are not able to meditate on the impersonal aspect of the Brahman, impersonal aspect Brahman. If you are unable to do that, meditate on that, then only you create Bhagavan. So to them, Bhagavan means any of the five, Vishnu, that means Krishna, Vishnu, Ram, and so on like that. Even Lord Shiva, they all consider the same category. So that is their gross offense. So Brahman, on the other hand, exhibits no specific quality. Therefore, an incomplete manifestation of the same truth, just as lotus conveys an incomplete depiction of blue lotus. As such, even though there is no real difference between Brahman and Bhagavan, they are not one and the same in all respects. The difference lies in the limitation of vision on the part of the seeker. So this is the reason I read, to make sure that you understand the definition and what context you are seeing it. So it's very, very important that we see the relationship between the energy and the possessor of that energy, the energetic. The Kirti and Kirtiman, that's what you have to understand then. Shakti and Shaktiman. Okay, I'll stop here and see if there are questions or comments. Hare Krishna. Govinda Bhadi Bhushantamam Vija. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Jai Shri. Sharad Prabhu, Bhavana Mataji's. Okay. Sharad Mishra, Sharad Prabhu is asking a question here. Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma have attributes. They are one and the same actually. And also do not have attributes since his purposes are inconceivable. That means we are not capable of knowing as our knowledge is limited and logic does not work. However, by intuitive knowledge, it can be known. My question is, how can we have intuitive knowledge? By simply hearing from acharyas, from self-realized souls, Srimad Bhagavatam. You first have to listen to Srimad Bhagavatam from a devotee's lotus feet in association with other devotees. That is the way the sound vibration makes sense actually. And its effect comes into play. So my question is, how can we have intuitive knowledge? I just answered you. Slide 20 says it is to be presumed. It's not logic. No. Presume in the sense what I said to you, when you see an effect, an example I gave you about is mantras that cure incurable diseases, right? That observation is there. So when you see that observation, that means this mantras does have that particular character, that particular ability, you know. So by effect, when you see the effect, then you can presume that the cause is must be this in that regard. So you have to understand in the proper context. That is what you context driven. Yes, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhuji. Today's class has dispelled a lot of my doubts about Brahman and Bhagavan. This puts to the rest argument between Vaishnavas and Mayavadis, I believe. Thank you, Jas Prabhu. Gopi Prabhu, thank you for the wonderful class. Text 17 mentioned in the slide is same as Anuchita 15. Now, Prabhuji, here there's a confusion about what book you are referring that. This numbering is quite different from the book that I follow, the Satyanarayana Prabhu's book, and the book that is given that is by His Holiness Bhanuswami Maharaj. Bhanuswami Maharaj gives a total of 121 anuchedas, whereas Satyanarayana Prabhu has totally only 102 anuchedas. So the numbering is quite different. So if you go by number, you'll be confused actually. Huh? So whatever the discussion is given here, that in that is number 15, it could be a different number here actually. Huh? Alright? So you go by a particular book. I hope you understand, Gopi Prabhu, what I'm saying. Sharad Prabhu. Now I understood. Thank you, Sharad Prabhu. Nilima Mataji. Thank you, Prabhu, for clarifying. Thank you all very much for your time and your attention. So, if there are no further questions, let's see. Oh, Makarand Prabhu is there? He's there, yeah. Gokul Priya Mataji, potencies are intrinsic significantly in Brahman rather than Bhagavan is confusing Prabhu. Yes, this confusion is there. But you have to understand, that's the reason I went 2-3 times repeatedly over and over again to make sure you understand that. What is by definition is correct, but in what context you are using that. Ultimately, there is no difference, no ontological difference between Brahman and Bhagavan. You know? Just by that example, I give the blue lotus, you know. So it can be confused. Even Maitreya Muni was confused as we saw that, remember? So it's no wonder that it's very natural to be confused if we are not clear about it, you know. Atul Prabhu, material energy eternal. Can you explain? Yes, I told you, material energy, it's the energy of the Lord. So Lord is eternal, so His potencies are also eternal. No problem about it. It's quite clear. But the material energy, this Maya, is the one who creates this material world actually, you know. So material world, that is inert, you know, in that regard. So Maya is conscious, eternal and conscious, you know. But the product material world is temporary in the sense it manifests and unmanifests, cyclically, periodically, you know. and it's inert. Prakriti or material body is inert. Is that because the Atma being present in that, the spirit soul, then only this body gets conscious. Otherwise not. Otherwise it is inert. No. So in that context, I told you that the material energy is eternal, but the product, this material world, that is inert. Sanjeev Prabhu, how is mind an inert matter? It seems to be super active. No, the mind, what is mind actually? It's a subtle material element actually, subtle material body actually. Sukshma body in Sanskrit is said. But only when the soul is present, then only mind is there actually. If the soul is not there, the mind is not there actually. Otherwise it's inert. In fact, the mind goes when we transmigrate to another body, along with the soul, the vital living force, all the internal senses and psychic deities all go together into another body actually, simultaneously. So it's superactive only when the soul is present. It's not part of gross body. Yeah, actually, yes, in a way, gross body remains here when a body dies, when Atma leaves, soul leaves, the gross body is dropped here. But subtle body, there's mano, buddhi, ahankar, that goes with it, with the soul, to another body. Right? But it is a part of the material body, nonetheless. Naveen Prabhu, if Maya is conscious, why does the Lord have to glance at Maya to start the material creation? We are conscious also, Prabhuji. Spirit soul is also conscious, right? But we cannot do anything whatsoever unless the super soul reminds us. We can see only if the super soul can see. We can hear only if the super soul can hear that. No. So it is the Paramatma, in fact, from 2 weeks when we start hearing the class about the external potential, that you will hear that it's the Lord who not only controls Maya, but it's the Lord who activates Maya. So that activation also comes from the super soul. When super soul enters, remember the Pradhan is inert. Inert in the sense it is dormant. All the three modes are there, but they have complete equilibrium. When the super soul enters, especially the time potency, or the Paramatma enters, it's the time potency that sets in motion actually. So super soul brings the time potency, and then Maya gets activated. Maya's three modes becomes activated, Sutra, and then becomes Mahatattva, and the living entities are injected in it, and that brings the cosmic intellect. The glance, what is the glance of Mahavishnu? Glance consists of the Paramatma feature. Paramatma means automatically time potency is there. And then also the living entities are injected with it, along with all the karmas. The dormant karmas is also goes along with it. And the living entity, when it comes there, the living entity has to be reminded why you accepted this particular body. And the reminder comes from Paramatma being there. So Paramatma is always there with the soul from each body it transmigrates into it. You know? So only if there is no Paramatma, first of all, the very creation of the basic elements cannot take place. Paramatma is required at every step of the way, that we saw in the second canto, third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Makarand Prabhu. Maya is inert. The glance Pradhan changes the stairs. Maya is inert, this is Maya, the Prakriti, the material nature. In terms of three modes of material nature, it's inert, because that's product. But the energy, external energy, that is not inert, that's conscious. It's the product, the three modes of material nature, and the Prakriti, that actually is the inert. So you have to understand everything in the proper context. Right? Thank you very much for the nice discussion. So let us conclude the class, only 3 minutes remaining. So I'm going to request Dishana to conclude the class with Nashima prayer. And thank you very much for your time and patience and your attentiveness. Dishana Beta, come on. Let's do the Nashima prayer. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Namaste Narasimhaya.